So this is an audio medium, but I think it's pertinent to our hypothetical audience to know that Tax just head desked.
Yeah, am I being attacked by this book again?
There.
Welcome to Going Pros, a podcast where we try to keep our recordings under 15 minutes and, like Sisyphus pushing his boulder up the hill, abjectly fail. I'm CZ Tax, and I feel like I'm in some sort of clock stoppers moving so fast everyone else is standing still situation at the moment.
And I'm AD Ellicott, and I think that time is relative and also a circle and also wibbly wobbly and also an illusion.
And so I take it that there's like a time themed short story collection in your future?
Assuming the concerning number of time based short stories I have don't end up in any prestigious or even dubious writing magazines.
Well, you know what? If they do, remember they'll all reset by 6 a.m.
Groundhog Day? Yep. I kind of figured you more for like a Russian doll kind of reset vibe.
Listen, you figured correctly, but I thought it might be a bit bleak for a non-NaNoWriMo episode.
Yeah, so remember when we wrote some like truly awful stuff in November of last year?
Speak for yourself. My stuff was only mediocre. Okay?
Well, mine was truly awful. And it turns out that is all part of the Anne Lamott approved writing method.
Oh.
So
if I'd known you were going for a segue into shitty first drafts, which is the actual, for the hypothetical listener, the actual name of the chapter, I probably would have just rolled with it and agreed with you.
But yes, these are a time-honored hallmark of writing.
And I said this to you at the time, and you vetched and moaned about how surely they weren't this shitty, though.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. I like this advice better when Anne Lamott gives it to me.
Yeah, fair.
Basically, her advice is you have to write the first draft that will inevitably be shitty. And in doing so, you figure out what you are writing.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, you figure out what you are not writing.
Mm-hmm.
And most of that first draft will be terrible, but there's some kernel of something good in there that you couldn't have gotten to any other way.
Yeah. She has a good quote here, which is that, I know some very great writers you love, who write beautifully and have made a great deal of money. And not one of them sits down routinely feeling wildly enthusiastic and confident. Not one of them writes elegant first drafts. Oh, right, one of them does, but we do not like her very much. Now, I do know one and only one writer who has elegant first drafts. And while she is absolutely lovely, she's also a stone-cold weirdo in so many respects that I cannot possibly compare myself to her, which is helpful.
Yeah, I think I know who you mean, and I completely agree. Absolutely wonderful person. But results not typical.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Also, let the record show that Lamott wrote Trust the Process in this very book in 1994. It is officially not a Zoomer thing.
Look, I've looked up lists of Zoomer slang, and as someone who is on the cusp of being Gen Z myself, I don't think half the stuff that they claim as their slang is actually new slang.
No, of course it's not.
People have been saying, trust the process forever.
Yeah, every generation thinks they've come up with something new and then it turns out that no one ever does. But actually, though, jumping back to the actual book that we're actually talking about, not linguistics, because we will go on this tangent. I know that we will if we don't stop ourselves. This is going to sound like a tangent. I swear it's not. I know a writer called Beth Weeks who has a really great newsletter, and I had to go hunting for the quote after I read this because it's from like February 2023. But she said, writing is the process of thought, not the product of thought. We don't think and then write. We write to think. We write and speak and compose as the actual process of thought. And Beth Weeks talks a lot about being inspired by Anne Lamott's work in her process and in her writing. So I think it'd be cool to mention. It links up really nicely to the concept of writing as a process rather than an outcome, which is kind of, I think, as we mentioned last time, one of the key themes of this book. And this shitty first draft is essentially a tool to make you, I don't know, think narratively. Is that how we'd put it? I don't know if this even makes sense. Please jump in and save me from myself.
Yeah, so I think this makes sense. The specific framing Lamott puts on it is that this is the downdraft. The job of this draft is just to get it down. And then you've got the updraft, which is the version where you fix it up. And then there's the dental draft, which is the one where you check all the teeth and make sure there aren't any cavities and that everything is sort of maybe even in good order.
Mm.
And I think that's maybe oversimplifying if I think about my writing process. Like, I go through a lot more drafts than that. But I do think all of those drafts I could point to that, like, yeah, the point of this is I'm, like, getting it down, or the point of this is that I'm fixing it up.
Yeah.
Does that look like your writing process?
So I don't know necessarily, because I wasn't paying attention, and so I'm not entirely sure what my writing process is. But what I can say is that every single short story that I've finished has this backstory where it's been sitting on my hard drive for approximately eternity because I just kept going down rabbit holes. Every idea I came up with, I would start thinking of connections or consequences or way it would link up with and complicate other stuff that I already had in there. And then suddenly I had such a big tangled concept that there's no way I could write it in anything shorter than like a Brenny Sands length epic fantasy novel. And then I get a deadline, which is usually our short story critique group, and I have to strip it way down to the bare bones concept, and suddenly it's perfectly achievable in like 5,000 words. And so, yeah, I think that concept of like figuring out what you're not writing definitely applies there.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like you're getting like a lot of stuff down, figuring out which part of that is the actual story and then fixing it up, and then probably doing like that final dental check with the crit group.
Yeah, I would also say like, quite often for me, these are not necessarily discrete phases. I'm doing the downdraft on one chunk at the same time as I'm doing a dental draft on a different chunk, because like as I especially feel like novels rather than short fiction, as I figure out one section, it has flow on consequences to other sections. And I have written enough bad novels by now to kind of spot those red flags. But broadly, yeah. I think this chapter also has an exercise for quieting the mean inner voices that try to stop us from letting our first drafts be shitty. And I know this was a big problem for you specifically. Did you give it a try?
I did. So specifically the mean voices I was dealing with were imaginary people on the internet telling me that I was probably being racist because I have a secondary character in one of my short stories I'm working on that's a person of color, and I'm not a person of color.
You're not a person of color either.
I'm not a person of color. So I'll probably get their experience wrong and it'll be like the worst thing ever. And so I, following this exercise, imagined each of those imaginary little internet commenters as little mice and sort of mentally picked them up and put them in a jar and then closed the lid and turned the volume down on them, and that shut them up.
Cool. And did it work?
I think it did. The character is still in the story. I also kind of figured that if I did get something wrong in this portrayal, like I put some unexamined biases into the story, that was something to deal with, like to find and fix in a later draft.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to please everyone. I'm not going to get everything right first go. And if I even like try to attempt it, I'll just seize up and never write anything ever again.
Correct. Yes.
Which links really well with what Lamotte has to say on perfectionism. Yes. So Lamotte says it's the enemy of writing. And I know you have some feelings about this.
This got me where I live. Oh, okay. Where's the quote? Hang on. So Lamotte's in this, she kind of sprinkles these like little personal anecdotes throughout. And in this case, she's talking to a nurse about some post-operative pain, right? And she, the nurse, explained that when we have a wound in our body, the nearby muscles cramp around it to protect it from any more violation and from infection, and that I would need to use these muscles if I wanted them to relax again. And then Lamotte goes on to say, quote, I think that something similar happens with our psychic muscles. They cramp around our wounds, the pain from childhood, the losses and disappointments of adulthood, the humiliation suffered in both, to keep us from getting hurt in the same place again, to keep foreign substances out. So those wounds never have a chance to heal. Perfectionism is one way our muscles cramp. In some cases, we don't even know that the wounds and the cramping are there, but they limit us. They keep us moving and writing in tight, worried ways. They keep us standing back or backing away from life, keep us from experiencing life in a naked and immediate way.
So this is an audio medium, but I think it's pertinent to our hypothetical audience to know that Tax just head desked.
Yeah, am I being attacked by this book again?
There, there.
Perfectionism is psychic wounds. Fuck.
So, look, we've still got to get through school lunches and Polaroids in this episode. So put it in a short story and move on.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Not so fast, Addie. First, I must once again point out that this is broadly the same advice that we got in No Plot, No Problem, and you hated it there.
Look.
This time.
Look, I think this has something to do with the quality of the writing in this book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm way more likely to take writing advice from someone who very vividly paints a picture of, like, the specific agonies of writing and does it with these really delightful turns of phrase.
Well.
Particularly compared to, like, the guy who advised us to workshop our novel with friends and family.
Oh, yeah, free focus group testing. Do you think it also helps that, unlike Batty, Lamont has actually, like, published a book?
Look,
other than this one?
I'm not a snob. Lamont's writing is just better.
I mean,
like,
yeah, look, you're not wrong, but also I think.
Look, my copy of the book is metaphorically dripping with highlighter fluid from all the lines where I went, there, that speaks to my very soul. This is the most insightful thing I've ever read about writing or life.
Uh-huh. I think it also probably helps that Lamont's tone is very much your kind aunt who tells you that you should become an astronaut, actually. She sort of speaks to you the way that she tells writers to speak to themselves, like as if you were someone you are very fond of and someone that you wish to encourage, even if maybe the dream isn't super realistic right now.
And not to continue to criticize Beatty, but he does have the vibes of a recent MBA graduate who's come in to downside your organization by identifying who is the most hardcore.
It's actually really lucky that Beatty found a NaNoWriMo, because if not, he would probably be working for Elon Musk at Twitter right now. So now we can talk about school lunches, which is a heck of a chapter title. This is about finding details that are like useful and meaningful in the ordinary things. If you keep writing about stuff, you'll find these moments or turns of phrase or characters, and that will be grist for the mill of your novel or short story or what have you.
Yeah, so the specific advice, which is like an exercise she gets her students to do, is write down everything you know about school lunches. Full disclosure, I accept and acknowledge her points and think this is an excellent thing to do. I actually have not tried this out myself.
Yeah, me neither, although I feel like this is something where we could give it a shot and maybe post the results on Patreon or something. I have very specific memories of school lunches, which is exactly what she's talking about.
everyone has a strong opinion about their school lunches.
Did you ever, you know what, let's not get into it. Let's save that for the behind a paywall.
Yeah. I don't think we need to get in too deep for the Polaroid section, which is the last one we had outlined for this first episode, which is now becoming two episodes. Whoops. It seems. So the Polaroids chapter for one is like maybe woke for the mid-90s, but
yeah,
probably would have been handled differently if she was writing it today.
So just to jump in briefly for those who have not read the book, like first of all, go read the book. It's actually, we recommend it. Second of all, it's definitely extremely woke for the mid-90s. She has some friends who compete in the Special Olympics and she attends to cover it as a journalist. And she's, you know, I once again, as someone who was alive for the 90s and as someone who is like both has disabilities and is involved extensively in like disability advocacy and all that kind of thing, this was extremely woke for the 90s, but it doesn't quite work for the 2020s. It's a little outdated in some of the things, some of the ways that she talks about some of these people.
Yeah, yeah, probably. But I think, like, Anne Lamott is notoriously a progressive.
Oh,
she would actually be doing the writing differently if she was doing it 100%. These days.
Yeah.
She would have learned the lessons we as a culture and people have learned since then.
Well, also, like, she is actually, like, she is very openly, like, has many friends who have, like, intellectual disabilities or physical disabilities or different things like that. And she, you know, that is actually, I put, like, actually having people with disability in your life and being friends with them and supporting them ahead of being exactly correct in your precise wokeness of language when describing these things. But that being said, the main takeaway, what do you think the main takeaway from the Polaroid is? It's
like, look, honestly, I think the lessons here are kind of stuff that's actually been covered in sort of what we've already discussed. It's more like an anecdote showing that in motion.
Yeah.
So the main lesson here is you don't know what your story will look like until you start writing it, which is where the title of the chapter comes from. Mm-hmm. So like Polaroids, you have to wait for it to develop.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit in there about viewing what's happening around you with the eyes of a writer and how it gives you a deeper and more satisfying connection to the world, which we'd already touched on in the introduction.
Yeah, this is one of the things about this book is it's really hard to break it into meaningful chunks because it's all connected. Like, she's very much on theme about, well, we'll talk about themes probably more when we get to the end of the book, but she's very much teaching the same lesson in different ways or supporting the same facts with different anecdotes. And I think so far we've got kind of three core messages. Message number one is that writing is great and there are many aspects of writing that are valuable and good and you should probably spend some time writing. Number two is that publishing probably won't make you rich and definitely won't make you happy, but if you want that, the way to get it is by writing more stuff and being a better writer. Three, writing is hard and miserable and painful, but that's normal and you have to show up anyway.
Yeah, but surely not like every day.
Yeah, really, like every day.
Going Prose is hosted by A.D. Ellicott and C.Z. Tax. Our intro and outro music is by Nathan J. Phillips. For more information on the podcast, including where to find us on social media, or to show us your support, visit patreon.com/goingprose or check the episode notes. This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Ngunnawal people.